welcome to Good Evening, the Alfred Hitchcock Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Shea Mutella, and joining me, as always, is my ever-constant co-hosts, Tom Caldwell and Chris Haig. Chris, can you see me? I'm real.
Are you? I sort of could have sworn I saw you go into the water, but no, he was very charming. He mustn't have been real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just give me a second while I finish my exercises here. Tom, how are you doing there? You want to put some money up on how long this podcast is going to go?
Yes, I'm. My wager's on 18 minutes. 18 minutes. Anybody? $100. 18 minutes.
$100? $100. I'm going to take the low field on that one.
Okay. The low so field. I'm going to talk really long and drag things out so that I win the money. You're going to try and cut the show short, but I'm going to go the other direction.
I'm broke. I will welch on that bet if I lose.
And I'm willing to be bribed to help throw it.
It's all very complicated.
Offers on the table.
Well, in case you guys can't figure out what we're talking about here, we are going to be continuing our coverage of Alfred Hitchcock Presents with Dip in the Pool, an episode from the third season directed by Alfred Hitchcock, originally broadcast on the 1st of June, 1958. And the story was later refilmed for Roald Dahl's UK TV series, Tales of the Unexpected. William Bottaball is a compulsive gambler. While on a cruise, he enters a betting pool to guess the number of miles the ship will travel in 24 hours. William hears that the ship will slow down to avoid an upcoming storm. The storm passes, however, and the ship continues to speed on its course. He thinks of a plan to slow the ship by throwing himself overboard. He figures that when word gets out of someone going overboard, the ship will slow down to rescue him. He picks out a witness and jumps overboard. The witness doesn't say a word, however, as she's mentally ill and tells no one of his plight. Which is not quite a very accurate summary, but that's okay. Because she does tell someone, it's just she's not believed. So, they don't believe her. I couldn't quite figure out what was going on with that woman. Like, why didn't they believe her? And why wasn't she allowed to go around? Like, what do you think was going on there?
So, in the original story, it's heavily implied that she's a dementia patient.
Okay.
But it's weird because in the story, it's a much older woman and actress to kind of emphasize that. Whereas in this episode, she's quite young. She's like in her sort of late 30s, early 40s. Okay. She's not. So I think that was kind of what they were implying. But to be fair, I don't think you're wrong in saying there is some kind of mental, if not illness, that some kind of impairment. So if it's, you know, dementia or Alzheimer's, or if it's even something where, you know, a mental illness where she has a caretaker, because that's basically what they imply at the end, which is her caretaker comes along and says, oh, well, you know, if you keep this up, they're not going to let you go on any more trips and all that sort of thing, and just takes her away, and she just kind of goes, oh, well, it was very nice. So, yeah, I think it's supposed to be sort of dementia or some kind of cognitive impairment, but they don't spell it out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of funny where she's like, oh, what a nice man. She's like, there's no nice man. What are you talking about? Not quite what she says, but yeah. Tom, did you realize what was going on with her? Because I thought that was kind of a weird plot twist.
When we first saw her in the film, when Butterbull was out, you know, in the ship earlier and ran into her, it seemed just like a friendly conversation. Like, you know, they just sort of talked to each other. And then at the end, when everything happened and he jumps off and then she is supposed to be the witness and, like you said, her caretaker comes by and talks to her and says, nobody, you know, there was no other man, you're making that up. I was like, okay, is she either blind and or is she some type of simple? So that makes sense what Chris was saying, that she's got some kind of dementia or some kind of mental impairment and her word is not trustworthy. Her caretaker is not going to take her word for it. If she says something outrageous, like a man just said hello to me and jumped off the ship, they're not going to believe her. They're not going to ring any alarm bells. So that kind of defeats William's whole plan, right?
Right.
But he's dead. I couldn't figure out what her, it wasn't really obvious to me what her impairment was or what the reason was that she wasn't being believed.
Because it's kind of a weird thing to just pop in at the beginning, and then I guess it's a decent payoff at the end, but to bring it around. But at the beginning, at the first time I saw it, I'm like, what's going on here? This is kind of weird. There's a few things about it, though, that were kind of weird. Like, where he's, like, slips that guy the money to take the Dramamine or whatever, the anti-nausea medication, and, like, that doesn't really follow up. It's just like, I can't let my wife know I have a sore stomach? Heavens no.
Yeah.
Well, he's got a really weird relationship with his wife, so I'm not surprised, because it opens up and they're just... the arguing over, you know, well, oh, well, you know, I will associate with your fancy European friends, and, you know, she's there, bless her, trying to mispronounce everything in Italian, and it's just, it's quite funny in a way, but yeah, I think it's, there's little characters such as like that which I wish they'd followed up on, because the actual plot itself is quite simple, even though I personally find it a bit insane that people are so bored on a cruise. That they're going to bet on how many. So, my mum and dad love to go, when I say cruising, don't take it out of context, means a very different thing, ladies and gentlemen. They like to go on cruises. I know. So they're like, oh yeah, well, there's all this going on, there's all this. And I'm like, right, okay. They've never been so bored that they've taken bets on how many miles it's going to go, and if it's a low field or a high field or that sort of thing. So I found it kind of interesting in a way, but it's the conceit for the whole adventure in a way.
I think the wagering that the captain sponsors and the captain freely engages in this, what is pretty much an under the table sort of a lottery that they're doing, is a sign of upper-class passengers having the money. Because they're wagering, I think, roughly $1,000 Canadian or American, you know, per gamble, right? And, you know, there's a lot of money. Like, that's a lot of money back then. That's, you know, a very high-stakes wager. And I think that kind of shows a bit of elitism. Like, it's the captain's quarters, you know, the captain is running this, and it's a very high level gambling operation. But to Bodible, it's really appealing, because the payoff is going to be huge, and we've established that him and his wife are concerned about the money that they have. The only reason they're taking the trip is that she got an inheritance from a family estate, so it's kind of an unusual trip that they would never do otherwise. They don't really have a lot of money to begin with, and then yeah, there's that weird bickering thing where they're bickering over, you tipped the waiter a dollar, you know, like, you shouldn't be wasting our money. We've got to spend all our money carefully. But is this getting to be a real cliche with the openings of these TV episodes, that the couples are just bickering immediately? I know he has to move fast and move the stories along, but that's becoming a bit of a cliche opening for these shows.
Could very well be. I mean, like, it's, you know, it's a lot of domestic situations, like they're bickering because they're not rich people, you know, like, she's like inherited this money or something, and they have just enough for this trip. I mean, like, she's budgeted just enough for this trip, and for him to lose any money is kind of gonna harm their chances to do certain things on the trip, right? And the amount that he actually gambled, I did a quick calculation here, and $1,000 in 1959 is worth $8,800 today.
Yeah.
Right, so like, that's a pretty big gambling that they're significant doing. Bet. Yeah, like, that's a pretty significant bet, you know. I get, you know, like, it's, they are arguing, but I mean, I get the impression that they're not rich people, right? And I think that we're supposed to get that he's out of his element. He's not wearing the right jacket, you know. He's kind of an annoying character. This guy that he's sitting down and chatting with all the time, his wife doesn't like him because he's annoying. So,
and he got embarrassed because when he was first asked if he was going to go for a dip in the pool or whatever, he thought that he meant swimming as opposed to the gambling pool. So he's out of his element in that rich part of the society group that's on the ship.
Yeah, but I agree with you, Tom. I think that this is just something that just the rich do on this cruise, right? I don't think the average people, because they couldn't afford it, number one,
right,
but it's just what do rich people do with their money but gamble and spend it, and frivolously, I guess, is what they're trying to say,
right? So,
What did you guys think of the episode as a whole, though? Like, this one here, I've seen it a couple times now, and this episode, like, really aggravates me because of gambling involved. Like, I try not to gamble very often myself because I know that I've got the gene for being addicted to gambling. I know that when I was younger, you know, when I turned 18 or 19, whatever the legal age is in Saskatchewan, like, I would take my tips from delivering pizzas and I would go and gamble them away like every night trying to get more money, right? And fortunately I came out of that habit relatively quickly when I realized what it was doing to my pocketbook. So whenever I see stories about somebody gambling out of control and spending so much money, like, it really, really agitates me when I watch it.
I've got a pretty calm head about gambling because, as you guys know, I work in the casino industry, so I've got a pretty good knowledge of how it all works, and the gambling part of the episode didn't really stress me or bother me. It is a fairly, I don't know, a fairly boring story. Like, there's not a lot that really happens, and it goes very quickly. Like, it doesn't really, there's nothing really that interesting that happens. The only real twist is the fact that he has this great plan to jump overboard and yell for help and turn the ship around, delaying the ship and winning the pool because of the timing of, or the number of miles they travel that day. But that's, you know, when that fails and we assume that he dies at sea, like, it's really not that exciting an ending. It's not really that surprise of an ending.
I think for me, I come from a similar background to Brandon in the sense of I am aware that I have the potential for an addictive personality. So when I remember the only time I've ever seriously gambled was I was 16. I went to an event with my parents, and it was one of these racehorse things where they give you tickets that have a certain amount of money so you can bet stuff and all that sort of thing. And over the course of the evening, I ended up turning an okay profit. But then my parents took me to one side and went, right, okay, you cannot let this be a thing because otherwise. And they were very straightforward and they went, no, it's not. It's not great. If you want to do a little flutter every now and again, that's entirely up to you. But, and to be honest, I've not really, since then, it's not really for me. However, I think it's an interesting one to look at in terms of gambling and in terms of addiction and everything, because I don't know if, because it is based off the Roald Dahl short story, I don't know if it's supposed to be just like a silly, dark comic tale, or if it's actually trying to say, here's the dangers of kind of getting in over your head and here's the dangers of gambling, that sort of thing. I don't know if it is trying to be too deep or if it is just going more of the route of here's something that's got kind of a darker comic edge to it. You know, because even the title, Dip in the Pool, is not only a reference to taking a dip in the ocean, as the main guy does at the end, it's also a reference to the betting pool. Mm-hmm. So it does work on a double meaning. It's also upsetting because I haven't been in a swimming pool now for over a year at time of recording, and I am... No, when they're like, dip in the pool, I'm like, wouldn't that be nice? God. I would honestly sell a kidney at this stage. I miss swimming so much. So the title annoyed me a bit, but I thought this one, it was fine. I don't think there's a lot of substance to it one way or the other.
Plus he gets in over his head in more way than one too, right? The one thing I want to say that I've noticed in the other previous shows is I'm not really comfortable with Hitchcock coming in to do the epilogue and then giving the story a whole different ending. He did this in some of the other episodes of the TV shows that we've looked at, and I'm happy with the story ends that the man dies, he lost his money, his wife is going to find out somehow that he died, and that's the end of the story. Now, Hitchcock comes back and says something about the wife goes on to marry another man, and you know there's another ending to the story, and I don't like that. I want the story to be what we see in the episode, and not have the entire ending of the story rearranged by Hitchcock in a little explanation that he throws in. To me, that's bad storytelling. That's too much, and it's not. I don't appreciate that.
See, the thing with that is it's not necessarily for this story, but for most of these, if you do just watch the story, it has one meaning. However, when you watch a lot of the ones where there's murder involved, by the end of what you watch, the person generally gets away with the murder. And then he comes back from the commercial and gives the summary and says, oh, don't worry, they went to jail. is generally what happens, because back in the day, you couldn't get away with murder. It was not allowed to be shown on TV that you got away with murder. And so that's just the format of the show. And so in this episode, there is no murder to get away with, but the format of the show is there's something at the end of it. You know, another format that generally happens, not all the time, is that he does like a sick burn on the sponsors of the show, right? Like we had one in this episode where he's like, I'm feeling really sick here, give me a second. And then he comes back and he, like, the cuts to commercial break and he's like, that was way worse than I thought it was going to be, right? He's like, so he's generally, a lot of the time, he has some kind of sick burn on the sponsors of the show. So
like you said, it's a bit of a broadcasting thing, and it's also this return of you know, natural justice, that don't worry, it all works out in the end, that sort of thing, which I don't have an issue with. But I think For it to work, it needs to have earned it in the episode. And there needs to be, you know, it's like finding out, because at the end it's, the ship ran into engine trouble, so he did win. But don't worry, it was a happy ending, because Mrs. Tibber, whatever her name is, and her second husband really got to enjoy it. And I'm like, that'd be great. But the thing is, I don't care about Mrs. Tibber.
Yeah.
If you show me a character who... you know, if he'd really mistreated his wife or something, or, you know, if he'd done something to her and that sort of thing, and then you pay it off in the epilogue, and you go, don't worry, this character who had a bit of a rough time, they're getting a happy ending. I'm much more agreeable to that rather than, you know, with what Tom pointed out, which is, oh, here is an unnecessary kind of little tag to, so, you know, oh, don't worry, there was still some money in the end. It's like, that adds nothing to the story. If you end it as the story doesn't...
It's the irony that he would have won anyways, I think. You know, so he ended up dying for no reason. That's what the irony is. So he tried to come up with this way to stop the boat, and that's the irony. But, I mean, we had it a few episodes ago in Lamb to the Slaughter, right? Where they're like, oh, she got away with it, but then she tried to kill her second husband, but the meat was soft. Right, and so they found out it was her and why she killed her first one husband, and so she went to jail anyways, right? So, I mean, like, it is a common thing in these, where they just sum it up and do change the story that you see.
But what I would say, the difference, like you mentioned Lamb to the Slaughter, Lamb to the Slaughter is a woman kills her husband. I think she should have got away with it, but it's fine. I'm sorry, the husband was I've nearly swore then, he was not a very nice person. And so she killed him, and I was like, cool, fine, get away with it. And it was that restoration of natural justice, and she ended up going to prison. Whereas with this, the punishment, in quotation marks, has already been, you know, meted out. There's nothing really to add to it. So I really don't think you needed to wrap anything up. Like, no one's wondering, did the ship get on top? Like, that isn't really a burning question for the audience, I wouldn't say. The burning question is, what is he going to do in order to win? Not, what is the wager? Yeah. So I think there is a bit of difference, but I don't think it was... I don't think it was necessary. I was very, very... I fully thought it was going to be a stunt double when Hitch got onto the railing and jumped. I thought, there's going to be a cut here. There's going to be a cut. And, you know, the little fat shaming joke, which is like, oh, they've told me to get off because I'm tipping the ship. And I was like, right, yep, that's where we're at. Are we?
Yeah, he mocks his weight quite a bit. He does it himself, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't think anyone would be like, oh, do you know what would really work if you made fun of your size? I think he'd just be like, nah, I'm not doing that. So if he's doing it, it's fine. But, yeah, it, for me, this was perfectly fine. It's definitely not the worst one of these that I've watched. But it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Tom, you got anything else to add?
No, I'm good. I think we've covered all the points that I had thought up on this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've also crossed the 18-minute mark.
Oh, so. Tom wins.
Woohoo! So, the only money that got into the pool was my $100, so I think I just won my $100 back. So... That's a lousy. That's the worst pool lottery ever.
Well, Chris, what kind of rating would you give this one?
I would give this 3 out of 5 words mispronounced in Italian.
Tom,
I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 Alka-Seltzers.
Alka-Seltzers. I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 minutes of exercise by swimming.
Yeah.
So
I wonder if he ended up on the lifeboat. So. Anyway.
I think he's dead, so...
Tom just wanted to make a joke, and you were like, no, he's dead.
He's dead.
He's dead. So.
Anyways, excellent. Thank you for joining us. We will be back next week with another Alfred Hitchcock Presents episode called Poison. So be sure to stay tuned for that. You know where to find us. We give all our details in our main show. So until then, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.